Federal Reserve's latest weekly data on U.S. banking came out on Friday and showed a shocking drop in U.S. banks' cash holdings, $170 billion. That was the same day that China's yuan absolutely plunged. But it wasn't just CNY. Japan's yen actually fell to nearly a four-decade low. At the same time, India's rupee did reach a record low. Now, officials across Asia are apoplectic about this dollar spike, threatening speculators, talking about currency interventions again. Funny thing is, the Fed's banking data that was released on Friday was actually for the week before, which was also the same week when all of this dollar spiking business really got started. So we have to ask the question, is there a connection between what's going on in U.S. banks and what we see coming out the other side in terms of euro-dollar and foreign currency exchange values? The answer is always yes. While the mainstream wants to make currency exchanges about the Federal Reserve and interest rate policies, the truth is the dollar value is the other side of the euro-dollar system, and so U.S. banks and other banks around the world and bank balance sheet constraints, the big one here, they're always involved when we see currencies move in this fashion. So we got a lot to go over, a lot to unpack here. Big movements in foreign currency markets, especially focused on Asia, of all places. At the same time, U.S. banks are up to something here. But before we get into that, I do want to mention that Eurodollar University's spring sale has begun. For the first time, we're offering brand new members a chance to get your first month membership for free. If you ever wondered what Eurodollar University has in its memberships, now's your chance to find out. Sign up, get your first membership free. If you don't like it, cancel before the month is up, you pay nothing. We also have the same deal for our daily briefing, and we also have bundles, really big savings, which include our deep dive analysis. So you can get the deep dive analysis, the daily briefing, and membership for one low, low price. Or if you just want a membership or a daily briefing, first month is on us. That's the Eurodollar University Spring Sale. All the information and details at our website, eurodollar.university. All right, what the Federal Reserve reported last Friday was for the week of March 13th, and that keeps coming back over and over, as we'll see here. Now, during the week of March 13th, the latest statistics show a $170.3 billion decline in U.S. bank cash holdings. Now, where did all of that money go? Well, that's where we have to do a little bit of digging here. To begin with, cash balances have been building really since the middle of the end of last August, and we've been talking about this all along. Banks in the United States kept building up more and more cash, and that peaked around January 17th, or the week of January 17th. And then, since then, the overall cash holdings had been largely sideways to slightly lower before this latest week. And then all of a sudden, $170.3 billion just vanished, gone. Now, where would they have gone? Well, they didn't go into lending because loans were basically flat in the week of March 13th after being down sharply the week before. So it's not like banks use this cash to suddenly go out and lend, which that's not how it would work anyway. But either way, it's not like they said, we're gonna become more risky here and do a lot of risky stuff on our balance sheet. Get rid of the cash and do something with that and start lending again. Instead, what you see is a huge increase, and I mean huge increase, in the amount of securities being held on bank balance sheets. This is the aggregate bank system. Plus $72.2 billion during this week in question, the one of March 13th, including $64 billion that was non-MBS, meaning basically treasuries and agency debt. So banks were suddenly interested in buying a whole ton of safe and liquid. Now, the banks have been doing this for quite some time. They've been dipping their toes and getting more back into safety and liquidity in the form of treasury and agency bonds because, going back to last year with the bond rally, they realized that the Federal Reserve is no longer going to hike rates, and therefore the downside in terms of prices for these safety and liquidity instruments is pretty much limited. Forget the stuff about hawkish central bankers and reignited inflation. The banking system is telling you, we're buying all of these instruments that were so underwater that it caused some of the U.S. banks, the regional banks, some real big trouble last year. They've set all of that aside and said, we see factors that are going to, first of all, limit the Federal Reserve. The Fed's not going to hike rates anymore. It's more likely to cut them. And more than that, no inflation. Instead, we expect that demand for safety and liquidity is going to go up. So the banking system has been buying a ton of treasuries and agencies going back to around last Thanksgiving. The big bond rally was in part U.S. banks getting more comfortable, more demanding, buying safety and liquidity. So if we go back to the week of November 22nd, the total amount of bank credit has actually expanded again. It had been falling since the banking crisis last year as banks didn't want to buy securities because of threats of the Fed. Same time, it sure as hell weren't going to lend. They weren't going to do anything risky in their portfolios. So from the week of basically Thanksgiving last year, bank credit has increased by $314.2 billion up until the latest week. And you can see the latest couple weeks, pretty substantial spike there. And largely because of owning safety and liquidity. Securities in bank credit, going back to the week of November 22nd, was increased by $221.1 billion. Over the same 17 weeks since November 22nd up until March 13th, lending increased by about $91 billion, but that was basically the same pace or a little bit slower than the pace that had been the banks had been engaged in the 17 weeks preceding that. During that previous 17 weeks, loans increased by about $105 billion. So it's not like the banking system suddenly started lending again, as I said before. Instead, what changed was the amount of U.S. treasuries and agency debt that they're buying, as well as the intensity of that buying in more recent weeks, which sounds pretty defensive. You're expecting that no inflation risk, no central bank risk, and a high degree of demand for safety and liquidity from the rest of the marketplace. Not only that, what might be happening as far as risks to everything from the United States economy on through Europe and Asia and everywhere else. Things that would be safety and liquidity positive. So that all took place up to around March 11th, the week of March 13th. But March 11th is the date that keeps coming back in all of these currency changes and the currency exchange values. March 11th, interesting enough, that was the final day of the BTFP, which I think in this context is just coincidence. It's not like the banking system being shut off of new loans from the BTFP suddenly slammed the door shut on everything else and said, we're just going to start buying treasuries here. Even though the banks did pay about $17 billion back of the BTFP, that doesn't match either with the cash balance in the H8 figures, which were down by $170 billion, nor the buying in U.S. Treasury, which was about, you know, around $80 billion. So this isn't really about the BTFP. But as far as the currencies go, let's start with Japan's yen. JPY had been around 151, which is a very low value, at the end of February. Then suddenly it started to catch a pretty substantial bid, largely because of the short-run idea about, hey, maybe the Bank of Japan's going to raise rates. Maybe there's some speculators in here as well, but it wasn't just JPY. There was a rally in Japan's yen up until March 11th when it hit 146.86. Since March 11th, starting March 12th, suddenly it plunges down to what was a multi-decade low near 152 by March 21st, which was Thursday, and then Friday kind of stabilized a little bit. That big move in the yen down has triggered a response over this weekend from the Japanese government. According to Masato Kanda, who is the Vice Finance Minister for International Affairs, he said, the current weakening of the yen is not in line with fundamentals and is clearly driven by speculation. Is it though? We will take appropriate action against excessive fluctuations without ruling out any options. We are always prepared, he said, threatening again speculators, some kind of intervention, even though interventions in these currencies never actually works. And we can see that in exchange value, which had sort of stabilized on Friday, seemed a little bit stronger this morning early on Monday, but then it's starting to move back lower again. And last check, it was 151.52, heading back towards 152. So even though the Japanese officials are not happy with this, and they even, again, going back to Canada, we have seen a large fluctuation of 4% in just 2 weeks in the dollar yen, a move that isn't reflecting fundamentals, and I find this unusual. And again, this is not just Friday. This is the last couple weeks going back to March 11th. Now, he says it's not about the fundamentals when the U.S. banking system that's increasingly defensive, buying up U.S. treasuries, maybe slamming the door shut on take some of their risk-taking activities in the interbank marketplace. Maybe that what we're seeing in the U.S. Bank H8 data is indicative of tightening up across the global marketplace. I think that's the correlation here, because U.S. dollar exchange value is a barometer of funding conditions and financing in the euro-dollar world. As I said, it wasn't just Japan's yen. There was also China's yuan. Now, China's yuan, as I said in our video on Saturday, the yuan had been largely stable throughout February and into March, though there was a little bit of a blip. In the middle of March, the China's yuan certainly got a little bit stronger on March 11th and March 12th before starting to decline a little bit afterwards. So March 13th moving forward, as Japan's yen is beginning to plunge, China's yuan starts to weaken where it gets back down to around 720 to the US dollar, which has been the range, the soft floor that the PBOC has been forcing for really almost 2 months now. Then all of a sudden on Friday, the yuan plunges to around 723 to the dollar, which triggered, of course, a backlash from official sources in China. According to Bloomberg earlier today, state-owned banks dumped dollars onshore, and there were signs of tightness in offshore yuan liquidity, which also supported the currency, according to traders who asked not to be named, as they were not authorized to speak publicly. Today's fixing is a clear signal from authorities that they do not intend to allow further weakening in the yuan, said Kun Go, head of Asia Research at Australia New Zealand Banking Group. Last Friday's moves were an overreaction by the market, and today's fixing is firmly aimed at correcting that perception. So they're blaming the fact that China's PBOC and other authorities had been fixing a little bit weaker over the last couple days. And by a little bit, I mean a tiny amount. And then suddenly on Friday, because the fix was around 710 rather than 709 in, some change there, that somehow triggered speculators to short the yuan, because now they're thinking Chinese authorities are going to allow the currency to be weaker. All of this presumes the Chinese authorities are in charge of the currency. And we already heard from Bloomberg about how Chinese banks are dumping dollars onshore. They're not dumping dollars. They're supplying dollars that the marketplace isn't supplying at the same price and same level and same flexibility that it had previously. Whenever you see the US dollar spike in value against any currency, usually it's against several currencies, that's a sign of dollar shortage. And when Chinese state banks come in dumping dollars, they're trying to supply dollars that are suddenly short in the marketplace, because this isn't just China. And this isn't speculators who are targeting China because Chinese authorities are going to let the currency weaken. It's not up to Chinese authorities to weaken or strengthen the currency. They're sort of along for the ride, although they do have limited influence in the short run. But as we see, it's not China's yuan, not just China's yuan, Japan's yen. Suddenly the same thing. And Japan's yen that was acting against the mainstream interpretation, which is a hawkish Bank of Japan, at the same time the Federal Reserve is supposed to be cutting rates, which is supposed to be JPY positive, not big time JPY negative. But also, as I mentioned, this wasn't just yen and yuan. Curious enough, India's rupee. The rupee hit a record low on Friday. As you can see here, the rupee's behaving a whole lot like the yen and the yuan up until Friday. But going back to last year, the rupee had been weakening from late July right on through to mid-December. It got to a record low of 83.40 on December 13th. But then from middle of December until March 11th, the rupee was strengthening again, recovering all the way to 82.72. But then just like Japan's yen, suddenly from March 12th, it begins to plunge, reaching a new record low on Friday of 83.60. What does that have to do with the China's yuan being fixed somewhat weaker by authorities? What does that have to do with intervention by Japanese officials in the marketplace? The common thread behind all of these is the euro-dollar system, dollar funding conditions. As I talked about in a video last December, going over what really drives dollar exchange values, especially those on the other side of it, the weaker credits that are experiencing these funding difficulties, it's not about interest rates differentials. In fact, there are often times when we see interest rate, weird things happening in interest rates that correspond with rises in the dollar exchange value. It's all about dollar shortages. As I mentioned in one BIS study, a stronger dollar goes hand in hand with bigger deviations from covered interest parity and contractions of cross-border bank lending in dollars. Differential sensitivity of covered interest parity deviations to the strength of the dollar can explain cross-sectional variations in CIP arbitrage profits. But however, underpinning the triangle is the role of the dollar as proxy for the shadow price of bank leverage, bank funding. So if we get indications, whether in the marketplace or say the Fed's H8 data, that banks are tightening up, becoming more risk averse, which goes along with everything we're talking about here, we should expect to find the US dollar exchange value strengthening across a large cross-section of the global system. Dollar goes up, banks become risk averse, balance sheet constraints, therefore dollar shortage. These are all signs of the same thing. And that's what we've got over the last couple weeks, in addition to the last couple months. So what the H8 statistics on the U.S. banking system suggest is that banks are becoming more defensive. And if banks are becoming more defensive, they're going to enforce more balance sheet constraints. More balance sheet constraints, tighter funding conditions. So if banks tend to be more defensive and therefore balance sheet careful, that might also suggest that funding conditions across the global Eurodollar system are becoming a little more difficult. And if they're becoming a lot more difficult, then we would expect some of the weaker places around the world where if you are a dollar provider, you're thinking, I might need to charge a little bit more to provide dollars to this place. They're the ones who are going to experience the biggest setbacks. Japan in recession, Japan's yen, Japan's exposure to China, China in all of its difficulties, even India to an extent here. It is a widespread phenomenon that isn't about speculators. And it's not something that interventions by Tokyo or Beijing are going to correct. Rising bank difficulties, rising bank risk aversion, dollar shortage symptoms. And that's what we're getting here. It's the banking system, maybe not just in the US, but around the rest of the world, just experience a risk aversion spasm. Now, what was the exact cause? Can't say for sure on the short run. We also have to mention and factor here how the mid-March bottleneck, that happened during this period too. So we'll see how all of this plays out over the weeks and months ahead. But a dollar, especially rising in this fashion against these other currencies, these key currencies, to the point that it's triggered responses from governments, that's not a really good sign. Nor is it that the U.S. banking system seems to be behaving increasingly defensive, more certain about buying U.S. treasuries because they know rates are biased downward. Not a good sign there either. The dollar goes up, interest rates go down. That's a pretty substantial combination and not a good one. I mentioned the video I did in December on covered interest parity, what really drives the dollar exchange value, that BIS study and report, and everything else that goes along with it. That's the video linked below. Check out our spring sale at Eurodollar University. If you are a member or subscriber, I cannot thank you enough. And until next time, take care.